Welcome to the Equality Conversation podcast with gender equality trailblazer, best-selling author of Don't Fix Women, and founder and CEO of Encompass Equality, Joy Burnford. This show explores what we can all do to champion gender equality at work. And in this series, Joy will be talking to extraordinary people leaders about diversity and inclusion and the top things they think have made the biggest impact in accelerating gender equality and enabling the retention of women in the workplace. So if you're looking for insights, guidance, or advice on how to improve gender equality in your organization, grab a cuppa, go for a walk, or escape for a while and tune in to today's conversation.
It's an absolute pleasure to welcome Dean Curtis as my guest today. Dean is CEO of LexisNexis Risk Solutions Data Services and has been recognised for the fourth year in a row on the Heroes Role Model list, a testament to the great work he and his team are doing to promote inclusion. He joins me today to talk about his passion for diversity and some of the initiatives that have helped create an inclusive culture within the businesses he leads. Hello, Dean, and welcome to the Equality Conversation.
Hey, Joy, thanks for having me.
It's wonderful to have you on the podcast. So let's start. Perhaps you could tell the listeners a little bit about your background, your career, and your role at LexisNexis Risk Solutions, which is quite a long mouthful of a company to be working for.
I still joke with a lot of people when talking about careers that I still don't know what I want to do when I grow up. I've kind of ended up landing in the right place, but I think some of that's intentional by focusing on the kind of performance pieces of a career over an outcome. And I started my life really as a, you know, wanting to be a budding footballer actually. And so I was in football, and very quickly around the ages of 17 and 18, I realized that wasn't going to work out for me. A number of injuries and lots of different things. And then I transitioned, and through that started my life in private client stockbroking. So I worked for Rothschilds, James Capel, and HSBC Investment Management. And then I went back into football as a coach. And some of that has really had a profound impact on the way I lead and think about culture, in all honesty. And then after that, I went back to Investec Bank. And then not long after 9/11, I got approached by a headhunter who I knew quite well. And so this is a little bit off the beaten track, but there's this business startup, tech startup, that does online compliance. And I went to meet this business, and I basically helped them set up a business doing anti-terrorist financing and anti-money laundering after 9/11. And this was like 2003-04. So I've now been in the data and technology business for about 20 years. And done very number of different things. I've worked at FTSE. I was the first non-US employee of Wolters Kluwer Financial Services, grew that globally, set up the global account program at Thomson Reuters, and a bit of a spell in private equity. And for the last 10 years, I've worked for RELX, which is probably the biggest company that people haven't heard of. So we're currently ninth in the FTSE. And there's four divisions. One of the divisions is LexisNexis Risk Solutions. So we specialize in business-to-business risk decisioning. And I run a portfolio of businesses that used to be called Read Business Information. So we used to own many, many magazines, Marie Claire and Farmers Weekly. And over the last 15 years, that business has transitioned into five business-to-business data businesses. So if you ask Alexa about flight details or go on Expedia, that's us. If you, the bottom of your gas bill, there's a benchmark price, that's us. And also in HR, information expert HR, real estate, EG. So very, very diverse, but my job really is about leadership over subject matter now, I would say.
I love the fact that you've been a coach, football coach. And I know this is probably not what we were going to be talking about, but I'd love to just maybe think about that in terms of, you know, inclusive leadership and your experience being a football coach and how some of those skills being a football coach has helped you. I always think about Serena Wiegmann and the women's football team and how she seems to be, you know, doing amazingly. with that? And obviously that's from an outsider's point of view, but anything you wanted to kind of comment on around the kind of behavioural traits or skills that you had as a football coach and how that's helped you with your kind of current role?
Yeah, so I've had the pleasure of meeting Serena, which was fantastic. There's a couple of core beliefs, and I touched on one in my introduction around my career. But the first is, in sport, it's recognised that focusing on the outcome doesn't happen. It's like trying to tell your child, you know, to pass an exam or somebody not to worry, but it's hit your target, hit the number, and here's my budget or here's my revenue forecast if you're an entrepreneur, whatever it is. And it's an arbitrary number. So we have a saying across our business, performance is doing the things you need to do to get the results you want. I have a head of performance in our business. They report to me. We have psychologists in the business every day to help people reach their potential. And the second piece is around teams, and both of them are related to diversity and inclusion, particularly in the true sense. And in any type of sporting environment, team sporting environment, you don't necessarily need to like the people you're working with, but conditioned over a period of time, 90 minutes in football, 80 in rugby, or whatever the game is, to win and lose together. Business, that doesn't happen. People sit around tables, well, they're not very good, they'll be gone in a year. And the pace of change in our world today means that you need that mutual accountability, which the very best teams have. And what that really is it means that you put the team before yourself. And that sounds so obvious, and everybody I speak to knows that, but I believe less than 0.1% of the people in the world have ever worked in a proper mutually accountable team. It's so rare. And the thing that really drives that is psychological safety. So those two beliefs in sport run through my leadership style, is in the DNA to ensure A, people are thinking about their own potential, and that's unique for each individual. So focus on the performance and not the outcome. And the second is create a space where you know each other's strengths and weaknesses, and you're respectful and you understand that, because you may get 10 minutes at halftime to sort that out. Business is actually a privilege there, because you get a lot longer to do that sort of stuff. So by applying the same thing, I think over my last 20 years of leadership, I've proved that it works. So we'll keep going.
Absolutely. It's so interesting. And I think I was mentioning to you earlier that I'm doing a talk for our children go to the same school, and I'm doing a talk for the school on Saturday. And one of the key sort of success things is collaboration and working in a team. And I'm actually going to reference, kind of, I've got a picture of the line that says, you know, teamwork is so important for people. But it's interesting, isn't it? Because actually competition is still kind of valid, absolutely valid in a sort of corporate sense, but it's that kind of individual competition is not necessarily that healthy, and having that collaborative way of working is so important.
Exactly. And there's a couple of examples with Serena for the listeners that actually, you know about the story. But the first thing is, the purpose that they were going after as the Lionesses was not to win the World Cup or the Euros. It was to really promote female football in the right way. And what she did with the team to engage the supporters, there was a true purpose. It was a purpose. It wasn't an outcome. It wasn't just a, we want to win this. It was, we need to make this game better for those that come after us. And that's the same in any business, if you get that purpose right. She's a brilliant example of what excellent leadership is. And also, she changed the team a bit based on merit and not kind of history or how well people were known. She judged the players, particularly the goalkeeper, who's gone on to do some brilliant things, based on what she actually proved she could do at the time, and no preconceived ideas, which is also the strength of leadership.
Absolutely. And being inclusive and not sort of prejudging people, absolutely, from previous history, which absolutely plays into the inclusion and diversity space. I know we haven't really talked about diversity and inclusion yet, which is part of the purpose, but that's lovely. It's great to talk about all these, you know, inclusive leadership is such a big thing. And as you know, in my book, I talk about inclusive leadership and those kind of behavioural traits that make it really important for any organisation to have that. So perhaps we can think about your commitment to diversity and inclusion. You've been recognised in the Heroes role model list for the past 4 years. You know, why are you particularly passionate about gender equality, and what's influenced your thinking in this space?
So gender equality, I think, is clearly just one part of proper inclusion. And I think intersectionality is really, really key. I think one of the biggest discriminators actually if you look in the UK, is actually socioeconomic status, which affects ethnicity, but also females as well, particularly after they have children. It shows that the financial impact on a woman is far, far greater than it is a man in terms of personal choices and money. You know, what we know is that the very best countries, communities, businesses, teams and people really do have inclusion at their heart based on what we just said around mutual accountability and that safety where people can bring their true, best, authentic self to the discussion. So for me, it's about doing it because it's right, but it's also the right thing to do for overall performance as well as equity and fairness, frankly. But we also know, and the statistics tell us, that it gives the best results. You know, the world is changing at a rapid pace now, and people think in business it's going to slow after COVID or AI. This is the pace that the world is going to operate at. And to get the best outcomes and the best ideas, you need to create cultures, different backgrounds, beliefs and experiences come to the party to achieve those best outcomes. It's differentiating. It sounds very simple, but it's really hard to do. Otherwise, we would be in a far better place as a world as we are today. But it's the right thing to do for all reasons.
Absolutely. And you're quite right. And I mean, obviously, my focus is generally about gender equality, which is why we kind of start with that. But you're absolutely right. The intersectionality and creating equitable workplaces is kind of what runs through all of the work that we do, is creating equitable places to work that everybody feels that they're included and then their needs are being met. So, I think I really believe in, if everybody's needs are met, you have a much healthier organisation and that diversity will just shine through.
And Joy, I do think, just to say that, I do think gender is blazing the trail because it's what people understand the best now, and it's been in flight more, and it's paving the way for clues to success for the other areas of diversity and inclusion. So we're still not as far along as we probably should be, but I do think gender is driving that.
I really hope you're enjoying the conversation so far. This podcast is brought to you by Encompass Equality. The team are passionate about sharing their knowledge to support and inspire others. And this podcast forms just a small part of what they do. Encompass Equality helps organizations to accelerate their journey towards sustainable gender equality by providing them with strategic advisory services, research, and a range of practical solutions that create equitable places to work. To find out more and to download their free reports and resources, visit encompassequality.com.
I'd be interested to know maybe a little bit about some of the interventions that you've used in your time as CEO to try and encourage more either organizational change to support more of a diverse environment. And also, do you measure the impact of interventions? This is a big thing we're looking at the moment, but how do you measure? People are doing a lot of stuff around inclusion and diversity and really thinking about how we measure what's working for organizations, and I'd love to know if there's anything you've done, that examples you could share about where specific interventions have worked or not worked.
Yeah, so we do many things. We're not sure whether all of them are going to work, but we do measure it. So every single employee in our risk organization, 11,000 people, and every leader has a KPO for diversity and inclusion with divisional and departmental targets around where we want to move the needle and where we see good. So we are moving along that journey. I think you cannot manage what you can't measure. And I think putting the stake in the ground is important. I think that becomes a little dangerous because I'm not a believer in quotas. I've seen places where quotas actually make a mockery of, I've seen people get jobs where everyone in the organization believes they shouldn't have a job and knows, frankly, and that genuinely ruins a lot of hard progressive work for many, many people that's taking a long time. And I think that's the opposite of fair and inclusive. So I'm a big believer in treating the cause rather than the symptoms. I know representation is important, particularly at senior levels. If you can see someone like you, then you can be there. But those people have to be the best and of the best standard. So what we try and do is evolve the people in our organisation to be the best. And we have put programmes in place for previously marginalised people. So we have a programme called Ignite and Accelerate for 6 years around female leaders. They get a mentor, coach, sponsor, and that programme is proving to be a good evolution of talent. And that part of it is unfair because it's females only at the moment, and we do the same for ethnic talent. But the workplace was designed for men, and it's not about creating women that can thrive in a man's environment. It's about also changing the environment so everybody can thrive. So the programs work, but we do a lot of stuff outside of that. We trained 1,000 leaders last year on unconscious bias training. This year we'll be rolling out a lot of training around psychological safety. We measure psychological safety through the Amy Edmondson 8 questions in our annual employee engagement survey. Again, that's a KPO of improvement for every single leader in our organisation. We have done other things like work with and nominate and engage with women in data, women in sales. The businesses we operate in tend to be areas where females are not as prevalent anyway. I was fortunate, the business I've just run for 5 years, we got to 51.7% female population. It was 50-50 actually at SLT level. And more responsibility, I'm kind of back down to 30-something percent. But the challenge we have is technology, data, and sales make up the large majority of our workforce, and typically the industry averages are less than 30%. We can go and hire the best talent and overpay, but as you know from some of the work you've been doing yourself in schools, there's a key time, particularly for young girls between 8 and 14, where they really become engaged in STEM subjects. So from a corporate perspective, how we get young girls to see the future, which is hugely opportune in all of those areas and will be for their lifetimes, is really, really important. So that's a very long, broad answer to a very succinct question you asked me.
It's fine. I mean, I think it's something I've been talking about recently is about apprenticeships as well, and how, and I'd love to know if you sort of ever look at that in terms of getting more women into those sorts of, you know, STEM roles, sales roles. You know, do you actually bring people in and try and nurture them through, you know, from the beginning?
We do. And we try and do that through different ties to educational kind of organisations. The biggest program we have there is actually around socioeconomic status. And it's a passion of mine because I saw a lot of it in football. But if you take, I think this is before COVID, and what I know about the numbers is they've got worse, not better. But I think over 68% of children in England and Wales get 5 GCSEs, including English and maths, grade A to C in the old world, whatever it is now, 6, 7, 8, 9, I can't. If you apply one filter, which is that child qualifies for free school meals, it goes down by 28%. So it halves, right, nearly. Well, I think it actually goes to 28%, so it's less than half. And, you know, what that says is that where you grow up, your postcode, your opportunity, what your parents earn or what they don't is, you know, if you hire purely just on education, you are that is the biggest discriminator in the workplace, in my view, by a mile. And so we run an apprenticeship program in our sales academy where we bring talent through, male and female, into that program. And it's been hugely successful. Across all of our organizations, for every hire, there is a strong now behavioral interview process over education for that reason. And I do believe too that it is a big discriminator still of representation at my level. So when I interviewed for my role 10 years ago, six interviews, four of them asked me about my degree. I don't have a degree. I've got five CEOs now report to me. Three of them don't have a degree. And you know, you talk about African-American females in the United States that would have been at university 20 to 30 years ago. How many of them would get a degree from a good college, which is exactly why we don't see that representation at my level in the organisations that are as and similar to ours. But that's something that we're putting right.
Before we finish, I'd love to talk a little bit about men. I know I talk a lot about women and I want to talk a bit about men because I'm hearing a lot of backlash at the moment about, oh, haven't we done gender equality yet? We've been talking about this for years. We must be nearly there. You know, we've got 40% on boards now. FTSE Leaders Review was out last week and there's now 40% of women on boards. Haven't we done it yet? You know, can't we stop talking about this now? And also, what's in it for me? Because I keep, you know, feeling for my job as a man about I'm going to lose my job and worried about that. And I don't want to push this gender equality, you know, message really, because it's going to affect my job. So I just wondered, are you hearing things like this within the workplace from male colleagues?
Always. And to be honest with you, I've had it against me as well, right? There's been times and things that have happened in my career because I'm a white, abled, Anglo-Saxon, middle-aged male that's able-bodied and all the rest of it, right? That can be naturally discriminating in itself. There's a good and a bad thing about that. Honestly, the good thing is that I feel that level of uncomfortableness because most people have felt that, whether they're a woman or from ethnic background, whatever it is, right? So I need to kind of lean into that uncomfortableness. I think the key thing about inclusion, and you cannot have diversity without inclusion. I've seen people go and hire diversity. Unless there's an inclusive culture that allows that diversity to thrive, you're wasting your time. And inclusion is always on, right? Someone in my organization used this phrase with me 3 or 4 years ago, which I've stolen many times. If you're not intentionally including, you're unintentionally excluding. And how you understand the people you work with is key. So I would say that. I also, the work's never done. I actually think we should be further along. I think that being an ally is really, really important and role modelling for everything in how you behave and how you engage with people to truly understand the people you work with. And gender, religion, ethnicity, all of that should not matter. You should be talking to people as they are and finding out about them as an individual. So that's what I think the role means. But then I also think that has some unintended consequences for females, right? Where, what would I say? I think that I see in certain programs that I've seen over the last 20 years, sometimes females could be more supportive to each other and not view it as a competition.
Yep. Coming back to that thing we were talking about collaboration.
Yeah, exactly that. I think that, you know, if the tide rises, all the boats get higher. And I think that teamship piece is key there. And I also think that, well, there's two other bits, I guess. I would encourage people to lead how they want to lead and irrespective of gender or whatever, right? You own your story. Even as, you know, it doesn't get seen with me because I'm a white male, but I did some things early in my career that were quite new at the time or different. I spoke out on social issues long before it was cool to do it. You know, George Floyd and the rest of it, all CEOs are doing it before. We're never going to do that. And the second, I guess, is the performance piece that we've spoken about. I've created my own authentic leadership style to lead the way that I want. I think part of the challenge for underrepresented groups and probably lack of confidence is they look at the leadership that's in place and try and be like that. My biggest creed occur to most females is lead the way you want to lead and the way you think is best and be true to yourself, because that's when you're going to perform at your absolute best. And then it's about me and the people around me creating the environment where that works, which is inclusive. So it's not a problem that females can fix on their own. Male allies are really, really important. But we do have to change the environment to be less male dominated, because for decades it was designed for men.
hence my book called Don't Fix Women, because it's exactly that. So before we finish, I'd love to know, in your opinion, how do we move this dial faster when it comes to gender equality specifically at work? And I'd love to know, you know, if you could summarize it in one tip, or people always hate me being asked about one tip because they can't think of one, but, you know, one or two tips or three tips, you know, that to other leaders to advance gender equality, you know, what would be the kind of the key thing that you would say, just grasp onto this and this will really help to move that dial faster?
For me, it's about using people's true, authentic selves and strengths. Rather than worrying about what people haven't got, really dial up what they have got, irrespective of whoever they are, right? And I think that's where we get to the best result. And I'll give you an example, and I know you said a quick one, but that's my quick answer. I'll preface it with, I believe that 17, 18 years ago, I got coached for 2 years, things that people typically say are wrong with women. Dean, you're too nice. You need to grow teeth and insert some credibility, and you need more of a presence, because without that, you lose accountability. And how do you influence meetings better? And people that work with me now probably won't believe this, unfortunately. It might be how good the coach was. But truly, I've had that very same coaching that is typically projected at so many female leaders, and it was something that I needed to develop myself. So it's taking away those stereotypical things and just focusing on how each person gets the best of the strengths that they've got to reach their potential.
And that's a big topic that I'm talking about on Saturday at the school as well, all about strengths. So,
well, I'm sure it's going to be brilliant, and I'm going to try and tell. So.
Brilliant. It's really wonderful to talk to you, Dean. And thank you so much for your input. And for all the listeners, hope you've enjoyed the podcast today. And thank you again, Dean, for joining me.
My pleasure, Joy. And keep up the good work.
And that's it for this episode. Don't forget, if you're looking to improve gender equality in your organisation, you can download free reports and resources from encompassequality.com. Thanks so much for listening, and don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss out on the next episode.